Hey everyone, I'm Ashley Banfield and this is Drop Dead Serious. And if you blinked this week, you might have missed the, minor development that Luigi Mangione admitted under oath and in his own words from his own cake hole that he stalked that CEO of United Healthcare, Brian Thompson. You know, the one who was executed on the sidewalk. Most people felt like it was him doing it, not just stalking, but actually shooting execution style. So in the federal case, he has pleaded guilty to stalking him. That he intended to shoot him, yeah? So, and carried out the plan on the sidewalks of Manhattan. Lest you think this is a deal that the prosecutors agreed to, it was not. It was not a plea deal. Prosecutors didn't promise Luigi Mangione anything. They didn't promise him a few, you know, shorter years in the clink if he would just, you know, spare us all the money and the effort of a trial. The poor family of Brian Thompson having to sit through a whole trial. No, he didn't. This is a weird one. He just said, okay, you got me, I did it. To the charges that he ended up with in the federal case. Because remember, this was a death penalty case. Remember that? it was a federal murder case, which is weird. Usually it requires terrorism or something, but they had this little piece in the statute that said, if you use a firearm, we can actually charge you with a death penalty eligible murder in the federal system. And they did. And he fought it. And he got that death penalty part, murder with the firearm, tossed out. So all that was left in this like federal case was the stalking part. Now, listen, it's serious. It's 25 to 30 years, right? And these are sentencing guidelines. So the judge has some wiggle room. I'm going to get to that in a minute because Mangione didn't say sorry or anything. He just agreed to the indictment, the charges in the indictment, and did not show an iota of remorse. Nothing. Instead, he began, I guess you could call it his allocution, by talking about his broken back and his experiences with health insurance and what he saw as the failures of the American healthcare system. Now, okay, I get that. We have all had a shitful experience, I am sure. I think it's fair to say we have all had a shitful experience dealing with our healthcare insurers, right? We all have. It's part of life. It's the same with your car insurance and your house insurance. And it's always a battle and it sucks. I get it. But I don't think it's worth killing someone over. I personally don't believe in summary justice, execution style, when you don't get what you want in the system. I don't agree with that. Call me crazy. But I've been to a lot of countries overseas where that does happen. Yeah, vigilante justice is, you know, it's fair. It's the old Wild Wild West. But this is America. And we're the shining beacon on the hill because of our justice system, that we actually do things in a grown-up way. We don't settle our scores on the plains, you know, or the sidewalks of Manhattan. But that's kind of what Luigi was saying, like, my back hurt. I was fighting against healthcare. Let's not forget, this is a rich kid. Went to, like, an Ivy League school. So, cry me a frickin' river. This is a rich kid who had everything, got to travel overseas and backpack. And apparently he's the one who said, it just put me over the edge, this healthcare system. Not to suggest that the battle against the healthcare system isn't epic. It is, and we're all pissed about it. But like I said, vigilante justice, summary executions, no. So I want you to hang tight for a minute because I've got a guest who's coming up and I love this guy. I used to work with him at News Nation. He was inside the courtroom, the federal courtroom, and it was packed, right? As Luigi Mangione read his business and did his guilty plea. An extraordinary statement. And actually, I think what was really interesting about this particular day in court was that Brian Thompson's family was there. Whole row. And that hasn't happened, right? That is not the way it works. Usually you go into a courtroom and there's a case and there's all these hearings and family members come, but not Brian Thompson's family. This has been so high profile, so painful for them. They have not been front and center, but they were during this plea. And this was the first time. So imagine the drama. I mean, just the emotion. They are coming face to face with the guy who did this to their dad. Yeah? To, look, ex-husband, but still a family. First time. And before I get into this bombshell plea, right? Crazy. There's a lot that goes into this. Like, there's some chess and checkers and chess going on. Like chess, checkers. That there's a lot of that going on because there's two cases. There's a state case. There's a federal case. He's got lawyers handling him for both. I know what you're about to say. How can that be? Isn't that double jeopardy? No, not always. But maybe. Actually, his lawyers really, really hope this is going to be double jeopardy. They, as soon as the plea was entered, it was like a nanosecond, and they'd already put their motion in for like, dismiss the state case on the base of double jeopardy, please. So you're going to wait for those hearings. That's going to be another battle. I got something to say about this too. Like, did we just get played by Luigi Mangione and his lawyers? Did we just freaking get played? Did he shoot a man execution style in the back? Brave. Did he just shoot a man on the streets of New York in the back because he didn't like him? He didn't like what he was doing. He didn't like his policies. And then get away with a plea that might actually have him walk out of prison at age 55. Plenty of time to, I don't know, get married, have a baby, have a nice life. Did he just do that because he was facing death? And at the very least, like life, no parole, right? But no, I think based on the machinations of how the DOJ and the state of New York went at this, I think we all just got hosed. I really do. I think we just got hosed. I think a guy allegedly gunned down a man in cold blood, and he will not spend the rest of his life in prison. I think this is what might just have happened. I'll explain in a second, but let me go back. December 4th. Dates matter here. December 4th matters, so does December 3rd, and I'll tell you why. But in December 4th, 2024, UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, walking down the sidewalk early in the morning, it was still dark out. He was on his way to his company's annual investor conference. Again, Midtown Manhattan, it was like right before 6:45 in the morning. Suddenly, boom, he's shot from behind. And the gunfire continues as he's stumbling to his death. Dead, right there on the sidewalk. Luigi Mangione arrived in New York more than a week earlier. And then he watched Brian Thompson. He watched his hotel. He watched the conference venue. He stalked him. And then he waited for him that morning before walking right up behind him and shooting him multiple times with a gun equipped with a silencer. Now, that's an allegation, which is crazy because he just said I'm guilty of stalking. He just said he was guilty of stalking. He didn't say he was guilty to murder. So I got to watch my language carefully here until the state issues are settled. But here's what he did after. He took off like a bat out of hell, fled through Central Park, tossing things out in Central Park, set off a nationwide manhunt that ended 5 days later when an employee of McDonald's thought, I think that's the guy. I think that's the guy they're looking for up in New York. This is an employee in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Sees the guy eating his hash browns in the morning in the corner. He's got like one of those COVID masks on. He's like, I think that's the eyebrows guy, right? And it was. Luigi was carrying a fake ID with him in that McDonald's. He had a gun. He had a silencer consistent with the weapon that was used to kill Brian Thompson. And he had a journal with lots of really indicting writings. Yeah, prosecutors say those writings laid out everything, laid out his motive, laid out the plan, laid out the whole stalking. I'm watching him. Here he's going here and the investors conference, all the rest. So Luigi ended up being charged separately. He got charged in federal court and he got charged in New York State court. But again, that federal judge later dismissed the two counts that could have put him on death row and left behind the two federal stalking charges resulting in death. Stalking resulting in death. And now Luigi Mangione said, all right, I'll just agree to that. I'll just go in there. I don't need a deal. I don't need nothing. Nah, I'll just say, okay, got me guilty. So he pleaded to both of those stalking, resulting in death charges. But he's still got that little nagging state thing. He's got to fight that separate state case for murder. New York has murder, but it doesn't have death penalty. So it's not going to be death penalty. It's a state murder case. Interestingly, this plea, this admission that, okay, you got me, I did it, might actually be the best defense weapon out there. This might be the best way for him to fight in state court. Like, it's weird, right? Because you would think, well, whoa, you just said I did it, but now you're walking into a trial with a whole big I did it. Isn't that just a slam dunk? Nah. And here's why. Because it really does kind of like fly in the face of logic, right? You say I did it, then you got to go and face a jury where they can take that record and put it in front of the jury and say, look at this. He said, I am guilty of stalking resulting in the death of Brian Thompson. Right, would make it so easy if you could get into that state court. And here is why what Luigi did could make the state case go away. Drives me crazy. So like I said, the minute he put in his guilty plea in federal court, his lawyers went, Shazam, motion to dismiss the state case based on double jeopardy, please, Your Honor. And if you follow true crime like I do for decades, you probably know about several other cases where there have been a state and a federal prosecution that have gone on without double jeopardy, right? James Sullivan was my first. That was my baptism to the no double jeopardy here, mofo. James Sullivan murdered his wife, Lita. He hired a hitman to go up to the door with a beautiful bunch of pink roses. And when she opened the door, he shot through the pink roses and killed her. And then he took off like a bat out of hell to Thailand. So the feds charged him and convicted him in absentia. I don't care if you're here. We're going to charge you and convict you. And when we do find you, we've got you. We've already got you convicted and you're going to have to serve. But he was somewhere out there and they didn't know where. They didn't know where. America's Most Wanted, John Walsh, does an episode on James Sullivan killing Lita Sullivan and Amskring. And somebody in Thailand saw it. I love it. And then called the authorities and said, bro is here. So the Thai police arrested him. They extradited him back to the United States of America, where in Georgia, where the execution style murder happened, the murder for hire, they charged him at a state level. And they put him on trial and he sat there in a courtroom this time while the evidence was laid out against him. And he was convicted and jailed. And the hitman actually took the stand and it was like, he was crazy. He was like one of the best witnesses I've ever seen. Hitman actually got less than James Sullivan got for orchestrating the whole thing. But there is a federal and state, no double jeopardy here. So why? Why is it a problem for Luigi Mangione? Why would it be a problem if it's happened with, you know, with an American before? Guess who else faced two different levels? Derek Chauvin for the killing of George Floyd. That was also federal and state. And there's a lot of other examples I could get into. I won't bore you, but I will tell you this. New York is kind of funky. They've got some arcane language in their code that says double jeopardy will apply in a sitch like this if the charges are based from the same action, right? Which pisses me off because like the charges come from the action, right? You kill somebody, that's the action. Huh. But... The stalking happened on a couple of days. And I think I'm about to have a guest who's going to clear this up for me, Tommy Cristaldi. Like I said, he worked with me at News Nation, and he was in the courtroom and he overheard what they were actually saying. The prosecutors were saying the stalking on December 3rd. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But the killing was on December 4th. So you're stalking on December 3rd and you're pleading to the guilt of the stalking that eventually resulted in the death, but the action was on December 4th. So I think, and I could be wrong, but I think that maybe if the state prosecutors are worth their weight in salt in New York, they'll say, oh, no, 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 this isn't double jeopardy. He pleaded guilty to the stalking on December 3rd, and our action, the murder, is on December 4th. I'm going to talk to Tommy about it because I'm not entirely sure that I heard it right. He'll clear it up for me. So that's what I am hoping will happen, that there will not be a dismissal in state court based on double jeopardy, that he'll be hammered at that level as well. And guess what? Those sentences don't have to be concurrent, like at the same time. They can be consecutive, stacked on top of each other. So you got to run through your 30 years in the Fed level and you get released, and then you got to start your state. It can happen that way. So I'll talk about that all in a minute. But let's talk right now about the hearing, because damn, there is such weirdness outside the courthouse, going through security, in the hall, going into the courtroom, and then in the courtroom with the Mangionistas. I know you've seen video of them before. They, a bit of a circus. You know, I remember the circus with Diddy and the baby oil and all that shit. That happens kind of here too with Mangione. He's got all these like googly-eyed, you know, lovebirds who are madly in love with him and have hearts, and they dress like Luigi, like from the game. And it's all very odd. But Tommy witnesses it every time he's in court. And he saw it yesterday too. And I'm recording this on August 15th. So court hearing and the plea was on August 14th, my nephew's birthday. Happy birthday, Matthew. And Tommy's going to explain to you what was going on and how their mood changed. This hearing in federal court in Manhattan, again, was the first time that Brian Thompson's family attended any of these appearances. So, oof, face-to-face, oxygen out of the room, right? That's uncomfortable. That when you go to a trial and you see family members facing off against the guy who did it, who stole from them the most important thing in their lives, there is no Netflix series, there's no big screen, silver screen movie that can replicate that sort of chest thud drama, right? And I've been in a lot of these courtrooms and it is uncomfortable. So Brian Thompson's family filled the entire front row, of course, on the prosecution's side, right? His widow, Paulette, was among them. And again, they were split, but they have two boys together. And Paulette has a lot of other family members that came to court as well. Moral support, very, very sad day for them, obviously. And Brian Thompson's mother was also in the courtroom. Not a lot of people have talked about her, but imagine the loss for her as well. Seeing those videos over and over again of her son being shot down on a sidewalk. You know, that's just like, I can't even imagine this happening to my own family members. I can't imagine seeing that over and over on the news as part of like the case against this, you know, highly celebrated assassin. All these people out celebrating on the sidewalk, free Luigi, you know, and there they are watching their loved one being gunned down. I know politics all gets into it. If you feel the way you feel about the healthcare, I get you. I feel it. I feel it too about healthcare, but I don't believe in executing people. I don't believe in summary justice. I don't believe in vigilante behavior. I believe in our system, and it's a good one. And I've been all around the world, so trust me, I know of what I speak. And I just want to give a big shout out to Nima Ramani, who is head of the West Coast trial lawyers. He's also a former federal prosecutor. He gave me the full breakdown on all of that sort of chewy business when it comes to the state case against Luigi versus the federal case against Luigi. So thank you, Nima. I appreciate it. The rest of the courtroom was packed. It was packed. And there were so many Luigi Mangione supporters there. Although this time they were dressed far more discreetly than they have been at some of his other previous appearances. Luigi Mangione walked into the courtroom, and this time he didn't get to wear his preppy sweater or his fancy, you know, suit with the open collar. Nope. This time he was in prison garb, tan prison jumpsuit, white undershirt. Yeah, because now it doesn't matter. Now you're just pleading guilty. That's what this is. So come on in from jail where you have been held without bond and tell us you did it in your prison jumpsuit. Interestingly, and I don't know why this is, it's just, again, some rules are different in different states and different jurisdictions, but he was not handcuffed as he was walking in. Usually, an inmate comes in cuffed at the wrists at the least, sometimes with leg shackles. Sometimes those cuffs are attached to a belly chain, but not this time. He got to walk in, no cuffs. Some members of Brian Thompson's family appeared to scowl at him. I get it. But Luigi Mangione did not appear to look in their direction. I get that too, because I think he's a pussy. I think he is weak and he's a coward, because that's what people do when they shoot you from behind. You're a coward. And now you're too much of a coward to look at his widow and his mom and his family members. Even though you're about to plead, yeah, I did it. But you can't look them in the eye. That's a coward. Before anything else happened, Judge Margaret Garnett issued a very clear warning to the gallery, no outbursts. And I get that too. In so many cases that are really volatile and high profile, there are outbursts, right? Sometimes there's fighting. I mean, it just sometimes all hell breaks loose and people start pounding each other, going for the defendant and the family and all the rest. Sometimes they go for the judge. I've seen that too. But this judge just wanted to be on the record saying, let's keep this calm, quiet, all business. Luigi's lawyer, Karen Agnifilo, then told the court that Luigi Mangione was prepared to plead guilty. And the judge turned directly to Luigi Mangione and asked whether that was true. And Mangione said, yes. What followed was a very long and painstaking series of questions to establish that Luigi Mangione was fully competent in what he was doing, that he understood exactly what was going on and what he was about to do on the record, and that nobody had forced him to do this or improperly persuaded him to do this. This is all very standard. Remember when we saw in Idaho, the judge looked right at Brian Koberger and said, are you pleading guilty because you actually are guilty? Or is this some shenanigan? Somebody told you to do it. And he said, yes, I am. I pleaded guilty because I actually did it. And now he wants a do-over, which is going to be real hard given the fact that the judge already asked you, are you saying I did it because you did do it? And he said, yes. So that's why you go through all this, right? And the judge asked Luigi Mangione a whole bunch of these questions. And Mangione remained focused on the judge all throughout this process. And after he was sworn in, he said that he understood that he could be prosecuted for perjury if he lied under oath. Told the judge that he has a master's degree in computer science from UPenn, University of Pennsylvania. Yeah, privileged. He said he has no history of mental illness. Also interesting because, if you have no history of mental illness, are you planning to go to the state case if you can't get it dismissed and say you had some kind of diminished capacity in some fashion, because that's going to be tricky now that you're on the record saying you have no history of mental illness. Said that he hadn't received any treatment from doctors or therapists for any psychiatric condition. Okay, you're on the record, sweetheart. Yeah, you're going to have to take that into the state case, and you're not going to be able to use that now to defend yourself against murder if it doesn't get dismissed. And asked whether Luigi Mangione had any history of addiction, he said no. He paused, however, when the judge asked whether he had recently taken any drugs or medication. Big pause. And then eventually he said he'd taken some sleep medication 2 days earlier. I kind of wonder if you get that for free or if you buy it from the commissary when you're locked up in detention. Or whether it makes a difference whether you're locked up awaiting trial or sentenced. You know, I don't know. So the judge asked whether Luigi's mind was clear, and Mangione answered, quote, it is. And Karen Agnifilo told the judge that she, quote, had no doubt whatsoever, end quote, that Luigi Mangione understood everything that the court was explaining to him. And Judge Garnett found him fully competent, therefore, to enter the plea that he entered. And she began walking him through every constitutional right that he would be permanently surrendering by giving this guilty plea. And Luigi Mangione said he understood each right and was voluntarily giving up each of them. And then the judge put it to him bluntly. I'm going to read her words, because blunt is blunt. There will be no trial. There will be no appeal. That's pretty blunt. I wonder if Brian Koberger heard that news and saw those words. So count one charged Mangione with interstate stalking resulting in death. Count two charged him with cyber stalking through the use of interstate facilities resulting in death. Each of these counts carries a maximum sentence of life in federal prison, followed by as many as 5 years of supervised release. But let me add a caveat here, okay? Because there's the maximum and then there's federal sentencing guidelines. Okay. And in this particular case, the government reportedly calculated the advisory federal guidelines at between 24 to 30 years. But the prosecutors in this case are looking for an upward departure from that. They want life. And the reports are is that that's what they're going to seek when he is sentenced. And I think the sentencing is going to happen December 18th, 2026. So on December 18th, pop your popcorn, because I think you're going to see a bit of a showdown there. The federal prosecutors will ask the judge, hey, this guy did this, and we want the maximum. We don't want the federal guidelines. We want you to upwardly depart. Typically, they stay within the guidelines, right? And of course, you know, his lawyers are saying, oh, Lois, please, poor guy had a sore back. And so we'll see what happens on that date. But it will be fascinating if that judge upwardly departs. It could create an appellate issue. So maybe the judge won't. Maybe they'll stay within 24 to 30 years. And then you serve about 85% in the federal system, right? And there's no parole system, right? There's no parole in federal sentencing. Luigi is also facing a possible fine of $250,000 on each count. So half a milbo. Once you've served all that time, 85% of your sentence, if you're going to serve about 30 years, so you might get out in around 25-ish or so, he'd be around 55 by my count. Yeah, it's going to take a lot of time to make a $500,000 to pay back the restitution, right? And when you start trying to earn $500,000 at age 55 or so after a lifetime of, say, no skills, or at least prison skills, it could be really tricky. And don't think for a minute that he can go on the speaking circuit, because you're not allowed to profit from your crime, right? So you can't just come out of prison and then say, pay me now and I'll tell you my story. It doesn't work that way. So it could be very difficult. There is a sticky issue with the whole Mangionista's donations and the money that they've all, you know, given towards his legal fund. I don't know the answer to this, whether you can use that, whatever's left over after the legal wranglings, to satisfy the restitution. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think the Agnifilos, honestly, I think their bill is going to be a lot more than what the donations were. So that will be really interesting as to how Luigi Mangione would ever even try to make a living with garnished wages and pay back that restitution. So along with the restitution, there's forfeiture, mandatory special assessment, $100 per count. Woof, you know, life ain't going to be great, but a lot better than death. I do want to mention as well that Luigi Mangione confirmed that he understood that he could spend the rest of his life in prison and that he could lose certain civil rights, including the right to vote and the right to run for public office, because, you know, this was a political killing. And I could see that being a thing, right? I got all this support. I went after the healthcare system. I executed somebody on the streets of Manhattan. Elect me now. I don't know. Crazier things have happened. So when all of the technical questioning was done, Judge Garnett asked Luigi Mangione to explain himself, you know, tell us in your own words what you did and what made you guilty of these crimes, right? She told him that he could stand or remain seated, and Mangione answered, I'll stay seated. Again, too cowardly to stand up and, you know, look at the victims left behind in the wake of the murder. But this is like, this is interesting. This is what I was really hoping would happen with Koberger, an allocution of some kind. Okay, why'd you do it, you ass? So here's where it got really interesting. And I don't know if Mangione butted heads with his lawyer on this one, lawyers, because if I was his lawyer, I'd say, you fall on that sword and you say, I am so sorry. I don't know why I did this. I was not within my right mind. I feel so terrible. I'm so sorry to Brian Thompson's family. Can you ever forgive me? What can I do to make it up? You do all that. And that says to the judge, oh, I think this guy's already, you know, starting to repair, right? Yeah, not Mangione. He started reading from his prepared statement, and he said the following. And I'm going to read his exact words. After years of enduring severe pain from a broken back, navigating the obstacles of the health insurance system, and witnessing similar experiences of countless others, I learned that UnitedHealthcare would be holding its annual investor conference in New York City on December 4th, 2024, although the specific location was not publicly disclosed. I then researched the event online. I observed that the annual conference of America's largest healthcare organization, with the stated mission to make health, with the stated mission to make the health system work better for everyone, would be attended by company executives, the board of directors, and hundreds of investors, not doctors, nurses, and patients. And the whole excuse me thing, those are his words, not mine. I didn't make the mistake. I'm reading actually his text. In November of 2024, I traveled from outside of New York State to Manhattan. I then emailed United Healthcare Leadership, posing as an investor at a firm managing over $50 billion in assets and requesting information about the conference. Unlike my previous interactions with insurers, I received an immediate response within an hour. Before traveling to New York, I used a 3D printer to make part of a gun, and I equipped the gun with a silencer and magazine. My travel to New York and email to UnitedHealthcare was with the intent to shoot Brian Thompson. On the morning of December 4th, 2024, I shot Mr. Thompson in Manhattan, and he died. When I did so, I understood that my actions would place him in fear of death or serious bodily injury. I knew what I was doing was illegal. And that was that. That was that. So, no, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have taken the law into my own hands and become a vigilante and executed a man by shooting him in the back. A man with two sons and a wife and a mom and other family members who are sitting here in court behind me. I took their family member from them. Yeah, no apology, no contrition at all. Just my back hurt and I had problems with the healthcare system and a lot of other people have too. So I did this. Here's how it works. The judge is going to hear that and say, anything else? Like to herself, right? Is that it? How about it was wrong? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have. No, He is fully okay with it. Even gave the reason, because my back hurt and I didn't like the way the system treated me. So I went after the guy who ironically was actually in the position and trying to make changes to make it better for the insured. I don't know if you researched that, Luigi. So yeah, I think that is what the prosecutors will say, mana from heaven, in their effort to maybe upwardly depart from the sentencing guidelines of 24 to 30 and say, life, this guy doesn't care. He's good with it. He's good. He thinks what he did was right. We have to send a message to the public. That's not how we work in America. We don't take the law into our own hands. It's not the wild, wild west. We are a higher order now in this perfect union that we've been seeking. Some members of Brian Thompson's family reportedly cried during Mangione's statement. I know I would have. You know, I would have. After he finished talking, the judge asked Luigi's lawyer, Karen Agnifilo, whether she knew of any valid defense that could prevail at trial or any reason Mangione should not be permitted to plead guilty. And she said no. The federal prosecutor, Dominic Gentile, I think it's Gentile. I'll ask Tommy about the pronunciation of his name. He then gave the court a preview of some of the evidence that the government would have introduced if this case had gone to trial, if Luigi Mangione hadn't just copped to it and said, okay, you got me, guilty. And that evidence included security camera footage from December 3rd, the day before the shooting, which prosecutors say showed that Luigi Mangione had been following and stalking Brian Thompson. Prosecutor also confirmed that the government had evidence that after the first shot was fired, Brian Thompson was aware of the attack before he was shot again. That makes it real egregious. Oh my God, I am dying. I am being murdered currently on the sidewalk. Makes it worse in the eyes of the law. The judge then asked Luigi Mangione the final question, quote, How do you now plead to counts one and two of the indictment? And Mangione answered, guilty. The next step will be an interview with the Federal Probation Department, which is expected to happen within 14 days. It's a pre-sentencing report, happens all the time before you actually get your sentence. They ask you a whole bunch of questions about, you know, your mental health, your propensity for violence. There's just a whole category of like scoring before you get your sentence. So those probation officials are going to prepare a full pre-sentence report and deliver it to the court after examining his history and the crime itself and the potential sentencing range and a whole bunch of other information that the judge can consider in making a decision for how long he should be locked away. And the sentence, again, is scheduled for Friday, December 18th, 11 a.m. Mark it down. And then as Mangione left the courtroom, again, they did not put the cuffs on him. They let him walk out without the cuffs. I'm interested in that. I don't know why, but okay. And one of his supporters reportedly mouthed the word unbelievable to another. And that other one responded like, it sucks. Does it now? Does it suck for you? Is it unbelievable to you that that douchebag pleaded guilty to executing a guy effectively? Brian Thompson's widow, on the other hand, had a different reaction than the Mangionistas. She took a deep breath as she walked out of the courtroom, the mother of his kids. And immediately after the federal hearing, Luigi's attorneys moved to dismiss that state charge, right? All those charges about the whole murdery thing, arguing that this would be prosecuting him for the same underlying conduct and it would violate New York's double jeopardy protections. New York's, the same conduct. But I keep thinking December 3rd was different conduct than December 4th. So I'll be interested to see about that. Manhattan prosecutors are going to fight that motion. You know it. But if Luigi Mangione's attorneys are successful, this guilty plea to the federal stalking resulting in death, right? That could effectively wipe out the next case. It could wipe out the state murder case before it ever reaches a jury, and there will be no life, no possibility of parole. And joining me now is the guy I told you about, News Nation's Tommy Cristaldi. He is a fantastic producer. Tommy has been at, I would say pretty much every single one of the Luigi Mangione hearings. He's been covering state for Mangione. He's been covering federal for Mangione. He has watched day in, day out for years as these Mangionistas have shown up in a circus-like way outside court and circus-like inside court as well. He saw and heard what the cameras and you and I could not, and he's here to take us inside the courtroom. Here is our conversation. Tommy, thank you so much for joining Drop Dead Serious.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're the perfect guest because, honest to God, you've been so dogged about covering this. You've been to, if not every single hearing, the next best thing, both at the federal and state level. So walk me through yesterday, just overall, like what your thoughts are coming out of that day.
I didn't think it was going to happen until it was happening. We saw the rumors that there was going to be a plea hearing. He was going to take a plea. And I really thought, if I'm being totally honest, my prediction was that we were going to get through the whole hearing and the judge was going to say, Mr. Mangione, how do you plead? And he was going to stand up there and he was going to say, never mind. Fuck you guys. Go to hell. Like, that's really where I thought this was
really
going. We've seen him make these outbursts in court before. There was that time a few months ago. It was earlier this year. When he was being escorted out and he shouted something about double jeopardy and 1 + 1 = 2. It's this. I forget the exact wording of what he said, but there's precedent for this, for him kind of sticking it to
the
legal system as best he can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we did get a little bit of that yesterday when he gave his statement, and rather than showing any kind of remorse, he used it as another opportunity to attack the insurance industry and to blame it on his chronic health problems. But for the most part, I felt like yesterday was almost, and this feels weird to say because I know obviously there was a man's grieving family sitting in the courtroom, but it felt kind of anticlimactic. I've been on this since the day he was arrested, if not the day that he did the murder, and for it to just end like this was, you know, going out with a whimper, not a bang.
So hard because I want to say he did the murder, and with this plea we can't, not yet.
Sure.
You know, we can say he pleaded that he caused the death of, you know.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too in his wording when he said I shot Brian Thompson and he died, but he never said I killed Brian Thompson. And I heard somebody saying, and I wish I could remember who, one of the other reporters who was around, saying they wonder if that's going to play into the defense in the state case of basically.
Oh, for sure. Right. Yeah, it's right. All causation, right? Well, listen, it's anybody who has a modicum of reasonableness in their brain is going to know that your bullets and your firing of said bullets caused man to die on sidewalk, not he bumped right. his head and died. And it wasn't really exactly. my fault. And it was just an assault on whatever, you know, you can try to parse it any way you want, but reasonable for people sure. will not probably disagree on that. So let's talk about the color, because this is not like your average federal case or state case for that matter. Not everybody gets adoring fans with lovebird hearts and like Luigi costumes coming yeah. to their trial. Walk me through all of it from the beginning.
So the first court hearing, I remember, we weren't sure, or one of the first, we weren't sure how busy it was going to be. So I got there to get in line at 6 a.m. and the hearing wasn't until 9 o'clock or something. And I was already fifth in line behind four girls probably around my age who were definitely not media. And I said to them, at first I thought I might be in the wrong place. I said, oh, what are you guys here for? And they said, we're here for Luigi. And I said, oh, that's really interesting. And thankfully, I didn't have my press pass on yet. I don't think they would have spoken to me if I did. But I said, you know, what brings you out here? And are you guys his fans? And at the time, what somebody said to me, and this has stuck out to me the entire time, was they said, we don't like being called his fans. He's not a boy band. It's not like that. We're here because we appreciate the conversations that this has started. And we're here more about the message than the action. We don't condone violence, whatever. But at the same time, as you said, later hearings happen. People are showing up in full costume. People are showing up wearing t-shirts that say Free Luigi. They have their pins, their bracelets, whatever. A lot of them depicting him as like a saint, which I've always found kind of weird. And I can acknowledge that there's got to be some nuance here, right? They're not a monolith. Some of them, maybe genuinely, I want to give the benefit of the doubt, are just intrigued by the conversations around a fair trial and due process and also the healthcare industry. But I think that for the most part, what we're seeing here are people who are idolizing this guy that at the end of the day, no, he's not a convicted murderer yet, give it time, but he killed a guy. And I think that it is a little bit unsettling and alarming seeing the way that he is being held on this pedestal. Yesterday, yeah. as he was reading his statement, I looked behind me because so many of them make their way into the courtroom. They get there super early. They wait in line. Some of them have press passes now. Many of them still don't. And there was one girl sitting two rows back, literally sitting there making a pouty face. She was sitting there the whole time he was speaking going, like, actually, I wish that I could say that I was exaggerating for you, but I'm not.
Lip them, bent down and pouting.
Yes, like, yeah. Straight up the whole wow. time. People were, so they have them kind of sitting on two separate sides of the courtroom, you know, and I saw one girl lean over and mouth, this is unbelievable. And her friend, I guess, who was sitting on the other side said, yeah, this sucks. And again, to juxtapose that with this grieving family in the front row, I just feel like we've kind of lost the plot a little bit, if I'm being honest.
Oh, no, I believe you. I feel like we've lost the plot entirely. And I honestly, as you were talking, I was thinking the young woman who said, you know, I'm not a fan, I'm just here for the cause, et cetera. I wonder how she'd feel if a member of her family drank and drove and seriously hurt or killed someone, and somebody decided for the cause to execute them on the sidewalk. Would she still feel the same way about supporting someone for the cause when there was such a heinous vigilante crime carried out?
Right. And I think that it's really a slippery slope, because you talk about that and it seems so common sense. Of course not. Like, they wouldn't condone that at all. But then it's like, well, who decides? And I think that the answer,
yeah.
right. yeah. And I think the answer can't be one guy, especially, mm-hmm. you know, I'm no psychologist. I'm not going to sit here and diagnose Luigi with anything, but the vibe that I've always gotten from his persona in the courtroom, and even like some of the stuff that he posted online well before the arrest, was this is a guy who is quite intelligent and knows he's quite intelligent and maybe thinks that he can, I don't want to say he thinks he can do no wrong, like that feels like making a bit of a leap, but I just think that it's interesting too, because something that's been in the back of my mind this whole time is, would he have gotten the same reception if he looked a little different, or you know, I think that that is such an important angle of it, of like, he's been made a martyr for this cause, but it's only because he looks the part. And think about how many other people who aren't rich, you know, descendants of a family of huge power in the state of Maryland, mm-hmm. who have also been screwed over by the healthcare industry. And I think a lot of times you see those people act out and get thrown in prison and nobody bats an eye, right? And yeah, this was a bit more of a dramatic thing, and it was the perfect crime until it wasn't, I guess. But like, well,
you know what I'm just thinking about? I'm trying to think of all the different cases. There's so many, but for whatever reason, I land on Eric Rudolph, you know, the Olympic Park bomber, not a super handsome guy, but once they caught him, he didn't have a bunch of Mangianistas, and he was anti-abortion, et cetera. And he would have a lot of political support for his violence, for his political violence. And I hate to say it, even, you know, Timothy McVeigh had his political supporters, but, you know, nobody would come out for them. And yeah, I think you're spot on with the handsome factor. I really do believe, after perusing Instagram for way too long and seeing the heart bubbles and the songs and the love journals and all the effusive, ridiculous behavior, I think you're right. So much of this stems from a hot guy with good brows.
The one girl said that she had an AI chatbot that was her Luigi boyfriend or something. I remember that this was...
Did she know?
I think it was the headline in the Post or something. And I just remember seeing her and knowing I don't even want to engage, because I try so hard at these things to treat the people there and anybody that I'm interacting with respect, right? Because,
of course,
you know, just because I think that having your AI Luigi boyfriend is a little bit insane doesn't mean that I'm going to be rude to you about it. But
you still
want to
know, right? You want to know what's
exactly
on that heavy
there,
yard.
There,
you know?
There does come a point where I feel like we need to take a step back and sort of just say to ourselves, when is this too much? And I think it's so interesting to, again, he chose to plead guilty, and still I'm seeing people on Twitter saying, well, you know, it doesn't mean that he actually did it.
Did
like
it.
He just wanted to get away. And like, yeah, no, it does. That is it what does. That means.
Yeah.
And
I same with the pro-burgers, right? The pro-burgers, the co-burger supporters. Ugh.
The internet really just lets people say whatever they want, you know? And I think it's interesting too, one of the main Mangianistas who I've talked to at pretty much all of these hearings, because she has a press pass, so we're waiting in the same line together. I asked her a few months ago, I said, listen, off the record, and I'm not going to go anywhere, but, well, okay, I didn't, I said, do you think he did it? And she said, that's not really what it's about for me. And I said, is that a yes or a no? And, you know, we were having this conversation.
Like, you're in court,
said,
where they determine guilty,
yeah, right,
or not guilty, so yes,
what
it
I said,
is
I said,
about
like,
that.
There's no way that you think he's actually innocent, right? And she said, no, I believe he committed this crime, but I think that we need to be paying attention to, is he getting due process? Well, he is, right? He
yeah.
did. He went through all the steps. It's happened. It's over and it's done with.
How many other people does she care about getting due process, by the way? I'm curious.
That's an interesting point. That's not a question that I haven't answered. I know she... When I saw her again yesterday and I said, you're the Mangianista, she said, well, I do other things too. I'm an advocate for, you know, whatever. But, and that's not to dismiss that either. That's, sure. you know, important work. But I just think we've seen a really interesting group of people turn out for him. And it has created a number of memorable moments at court. That's what I'll say.
Do you think some of the folks that you question, I mean, sometimes hearing the questions out loud makes people rethink, oh dear, what am I thinking? How many people do you think were dialing back the crazy, realizing like, oh, now it's like front and center. And how many of them were doubling down on it and saying, no, I'm in, I'm all in.
Well, I think that the most obvious example of doubling down kind of came from Luigi himself yesterday, mm-hmm. as he gave that statement and he said, he blamed it on his chronic back pain. He said, when he posed as an investor, insurance companies suddenly got back to him instantly in a way they never had before. And I asked one of them after court, I said, how did you feel about the statement he gave? And the word that she used to describe it was satisfying. She said,
wow.
It was really satisfying to see that he was, I don't know if she said this or if this is a paraphrase, but standing on business, really, saying,
yeah.
you know, here's what I did, and I stand by it. And She did say, it's unfortunate that a man had to die for these conversations to take place, and I hope that this is the last death. But even as she said that, she said, I hope that this is the last death resulting from the healthcare industry, I think. Like, it wasn't even, and to blame Luigi's actions on the broader societal, systemic issue of the healthcare industry, I just don't think is fair.
No.
I understand people's frustration, and I think that that's an important thing that a lot of people are overlooking, is people are justifiably very angry at this, but we do need to draw a line somewhere, and I think what's so hard is people don't have much nuance anymore. I think that there is a way in which we can both believe that this system is completely broken and needs to be reformed, and also maybe killing somebody isn't actually the right way to start the conversation. And I know that people are saying, well, it happened, it's over, the conversation has started. Yeah, sure, but I don't know that showing up to court with your signs saying free Luigi, when you know that Luigi did this, we've seen the video. And they said yesterday during court, they have security footage of him tailing Brian Thompson the day before.
Yes.
Like, he was tracking this guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that...
Tommy, you know what I think that was about? I think that was about, like, the whole December... I was reading your notes on it and thinking, oh, Tommy, I think you hit on something big. I think that December 3rd action might be so that when Karen Agnifilo takes this to the dismissal request in state court... The state prosecutors will say, well, no, you can't fight the double jeopardy based on the action or the prosecution focusing on the same action as in federal court, because the action that federal court listed was December 3rd. We're talking about December 4th. So I right. feel like that was a very strategic thing that they said in their statement.
Sure. Yeah. I think that, I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm no expert here. I would not be surprised if this motion to get the state trial dismissed is denied. They've tried it before. It's been denied before. And I think that now also something that
You know it's different now, though, right? Suddenly yes. Now you got a conviction. And so there is actually something to base double jeopardy on. I'm actually concerned about it. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
I've talked to a couple of really great attorneys, like Nima Romani's a former federal prosecutor, and he said he's worried. He says, I think they're going to prevail. I think that
interesting.
Luigi Mangione and his lawyers will prevail.
Okay. As I said, I'm certainly not a lawyer. I'm just a guy who has sat in the courtroom a couple times. But
more than a couple.
It's been a long almost 2 years.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, when it comes to the state trial, something else I read online, and again, I don't know how correct this, I try to make sure I'm only reading informed opinions, but you never know, is that now that he's pled guilty at the federal level, it makes it easier to go back to that emotionally disturbed defense that they were talking about maybe using in state court, and then the next day they said, never mind. And at the time, I saw people saying that's because you can't do that in federal court. And so now that he's already admitted to the conduct, maybe they're going to go back to that. I don't know if that's going to happen.
No, you're right. Yeah. And Nima Romani mentioned that as well, that this effort to get to a diminished capacity, which doesn't allow you to create, you know, the premeditation in the same way that a first degree murder would otherwise. I agree until I actually heard what the judge asked him. Do you have any history of mental illness? Have you been treated for anything? Are you on any antipsychotics, anything like that? And he's like, no. So now you're going to walk with that trial transcript, or at least that hearing transcript, into state court and read it all again. Say, now, do what now about what you were saying about your mental state?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point as well. I mean, he seemed as competent and with it as any defendant I've ever seen in a courtroom. So I do think it's going to be difficult to try to turn around, especially with the amount of planning that did go into it. We've seen the hand-drawn maps, and we know now that he took the time to pose as an investor and to canvass the city, and, you know,
lots of premeditation. It
certainly seems like it to me.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. I think the big question will be, does New York's weirdo state law that attaches double jeopardy to something that resulted from the same action, and my wording is you know, broad here. It's not the actual statute, but I just will be very curious to find out if they can fight that single action or whether that stalking from December 3rd resulted in a death on December 4th or whether, you know, the state judge will see it all as one big kit and caboodle. I don't know. And I'm here for it, honestly. When did they have to decide that, by the way?
I'm not sure. I know the trial is set to begin on September 8th.
Okay.
I have it circled in my calendar. It's perhaps
no vacation for you.
Nope. No. Mm-hmm. It's perhaps the assignment I'm most, again, excited feels like the wrong word, but like I love being in the courtroom and taking those notes and stuff like that. So I don't know. I suppose we'll know by then. I imagine we'll likely know sooner because of all the scheduling that gets involved and everything. But if it's happening, I will be there. And if not, maybe I will plan a vacation for early September.
I think you need one. But here's the big question for you as well. As the time ticks on and the years pass, people tend to move on and their excited utterances tend to become a little bit more muted. Fewer people turn up. How would you gauge, you know, the very beginning of this and the very first hearing when the whole full circus was out with the costumes and all the rest to yesterday and predictions for September? Like, how much has it withered away, that the Free Luigi Mangianista moment?
The crowd was definitely smaller yesterday than it was at the beginning. There was no mass protest. I didn't see any kind of Luigi costumes. And I don't know how much of that is due to it being federal court and they crack down a bit more on what you're wearing and things like that. But also, I know that at the beginning, there were a lot of people traveling from out of state. And I feel like we've been seeing less of that. Not none of that, but less of that. I think that it also probably didn't help that this hearing was scheduled at the last minute. So I think it's somewhat difficult to ascertain if that's going to continue going forward. I think that this core group of people, the ones that I've spoken to, the ones that I've seen at every hearing, will be there for a trial if it happens. I said, what comes next? And they said, the state trial, unless it's hopefully thrown out. Their words, not mine. And I think that sort
did
of
you get
the
feeling it was a fad that has diminished?
I'll say this. There was an Instagram account that was maybe the most frustrating thing on the internet, in my opinion. No hate, no shade to the person who runs the account, but it was comics, hand-drawn, telling stories of people trying to live like Luigi at first. It was, they always tied back into these fantasy scenarios of Luigi helping other inmates learn how to do whatever, and Luigi cleaning up on behalf of everybody else, you know, like weird fantasy scenarios that they can obviously have no idea that exist. And then the comic would always end with the little kid saying to his mom, you know, oh, I want to be like Luigi. Can we go put up more Free Luigi posters? It drove me nuts.
Yeah.
That's not really the point. The point is, a few months ago, the account rebranded. It got rid of all the Luigi stuff, and now it is simply an account that does comics that call attention to inmates who are on death row that didn't get due process. And I think that that is a much more productive use of the account. I actually find some of the comics pretty informative now, but I say this because I think that that's really where you're going to see a divergence. There are people who genuinely were in this for the conversations it was starting, for the healthcare, for the due process. They're going to channel this, and Luigi's done. He's going to prison. He's going to be there for a long time, if not forever. If these people are really so passionate about these causes, they're going to channel them into other outlets. It's going to be broader than just, okay, this one guy is being denied due process. Here are all these people on death row that we need to take a look at again, right? Versus, I think that there are some of them who love coming in their green t-shirts and whatever else, and they'll remember the time they spent at court together, but like, it's done for them too, I think. And I think that that is really where you can separate who of these people are
altruistically committed to something bigger.
Yes, and who are his fans.
Yeah, who just really thought he was hot. Because, yeah, I don't think a lot of these folks are going to rebrand their accounts or
exactly, or
turn to another cause or support Mario from now on. I don't think that's going to happen. I find that to be really frustrating and sad because I remember when I was at CrimeCon last year, I think it was, I gave a panel discussion on this. And my main message was there are a few things in life that I can say in absolute certainty. And one is that puppies are cute and murder is bad. And so my Luigi, you know, perspective stems from that. And that I have lived in the countries where summary justice is fine and vigilante justice is fine and, you know, honor killings are fine. And that's not us. And so if we're really committed to being us, warts and all, if we really love us, that ain't us.
Yes, agree. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, good luck with the next hearing. Will you come back on and tell me about it?
If you'll have me, absolutely.
100%. You pick the topic too. Anytime, you're on.
Cool. Appreciate it.
My great thanks to Tommy Cristaldi. Like I said, I am so thankful for producers like Tommy who stick it out, you know, and they are there through thick and thin. They sit through all of these hearings because the federal system doesn't allow cameras in the courtroom. But I will tell you this. One thing I think you are going to see if this case does get prosecuted in the state court, Luigi Mangione's lawyers want cameras in the state court. And why do you think that? I think they think because he's cute, because he's handsome, and he's got all these fans, Mangionistas, most of them women, who have like hearts and all the rest for this killer. And so I think they think that will help. That'll help fix the jury pool, make sure everybody thinks he's so cute he couldn't possibly be the bad guy they're saying he is. That's just my thinking. But I don't know. Will it? Or won't it end up in court? You got to stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any updates to this as well. It's an easy thing. It's free and it's fun and it does me a huge solid. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. And as I like to say, truth isn't just serious. It's drop dead serious.